Welcome to the 2-4. Let me apologize off the top for the band playing in my basement. I'm not renting out my basement to bands. There happens to be people who live down there, and they seem to be having... Last time was upstairs, this time's downstairs.
What, so, how would you describe their sound?
Downstairs right now is, they got like a...
I'm just catching it.
Catching some of that tune.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on down. Upstairs is like a jazz fusion thing. Downstairs is definitely straight up from the school of rock.
Very nice. So grungy. These are two separate bands. I was under the impression it was the same band.
No. Very different stories. Yeah. No. I don't live between band practice space. Well, I sort of do, but not with the same band. It's upstairs are a bunch of music students. Downstairs is just a guy who happens to have an electric guitar, I think.
Ah.
That's me. I just live among artists. You know how it is. Podcaster in the middle.
Frank Grimes lived on top of a bowling alley and underneath another bowling alley.
That's very true. Second excellent Simpsons reference in as many weeks for us. You know, these cities like this where we're... How about my mayor? Have you heard this?
What do you do now?
Oh, there's another crack tape just came out. Globe and Mail's got it.
Oh, really?
Apparently he's gone to rehab.
Well, good for him. It's about fucking time.
It's way past time.
Fair enough.
So that's... I've been watching basketball and following Twitter for the crack. As well as watching the... A little unfortunate because I want to see the bloodbath that was Boston-Montreal... Philadelphia-Pittsburgh happened. It's not going to happen. It's going to be New York-Pittsburgh Rangers winning that one. So just two series left to be played out as we record this. Obviously, by the time you hear it, you'll know what the hell's going on. So ignore the parts where we reference anything that happens between Minnesota and Colorado and L.A. and San Jose. Though it's worth talking about, no matter what happens in this San Jose-L.A. game on Wednesday night, that the Sharks really do know how to shark sometimes.
Yeah, and I guess anything can happen. Maybe they pull this off. And if they pull this off, then, you know, the narrative flips immediately to, you know, this is the test they needed to finally get him over the hump. And maybe there's some truth to that. But I have a feeling LA is going to win. I have a feeling LA is going to win tonight.
What does that say? I mean, you know, this might all sound silly once San Jose wins tonight. But what does that say about the Sharks? I mean, even I was on board this year. To blow 3-0, that's the biggest blown Sharks lead of all time, which is saying something.
And it's against a really good team and a really good goalie, and I know their best defenseman was injured, but I don't know what they do. I don't know if they blow the team up, though. I mean, they just re-upped Thornton. They just re-upped Marlowe. You're not going to get rid of Pavelski or Couture. You just keep rolling out that same lineup and hope that one year it clicks. But, I mean, you got to think if they do this after all those disappointments and then have a historic collapse... They got to do something. I just don't know what that something is.
Even I was in. I mean, we'll see what happens. They can still win tonight.
They could.
We should mention off the top here that, well, coming right up, actually, before we even get into the 12-pack, we're going to have Jeff Merrick on the program, which is exciting. He's, you may know him from various programming on Sportsnet involving hockey. Next year, he's headed over to a little, what's the name of that show that they run on that government-funded network? Hockey Night in Canada?
That would be Hockey Night in Canada.
He'll be jumping on that, and... But to warm up, like all the greats, he decided he needed a little stop by on the 2-4. Because that's what you do before you go to Hockey Night in Canada. So we'll be chatting with him in the in a couple minutes' time. Since we last cast, absolutely nothing happened. Zero has happened since we last cast, at least when it comes to the Montreal Canadiens. They had a closed practice involving some of the Black Aces. And that's it. That's all.
And, we just wait and wait and wait. And slightly more notably, Alex Galchenyuk did skate today.
That is more notable. Skated for the first time. Just skated, so I don't know what that tells us, really.
Yeah, fair enough.
Could be still a ways away. So let's do it. Let's jump into this thing. Without further ado, we give you Jeff Merrick, and we'll come back and we'll hit the 12-pack. Enjoy.
All right, we are joined tonight by Jeff Merrick. You know him, of course, as the host of Hockey Central on Sportsnet. He is the co-host of one of my favorite podcasts of all time, the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. And starting next season, you'll see him everywhere, basically, as one of the co-hosts of the Rogers Hockey Night in Canada Dream Team. He's Jeff Merrick. He's with us tonight on the 2-4. How's it going, Jeff?
Good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Not too bad.
Not bad. We're just waiting for the rest of these teams to finish up their series so we can get on to round two.
Yeah, no kidding. What an exciting first round as well. I mean, I always say that, but I don't know why I should be surprised at this point. It's always the first round that delivers. That delivers the maximum action, and usually it's the second round that's the letdown. But now, when you look at the Montreal Canadiens and the Boston Bruins, I don't think there's any way that about the seven of these two teams is going to have anything less than, you know, screaming headlines attached to it.
One thing I wanted to ask, because obviously we're very much inside the bubble, and so give us your take on the Boston Bruins Montreal Canadiens rivalry from the outside. I mean, is there a villain? Is there a good guy? Is it all villainy? What's the outside NHL take on what we're in the middle of here?
In what sense?
I mean, well, the storylines that you're looking at, and you know, are people choosing? Are they seeing the Bruins the way the Canadiens see the Bruins, as this villains of the NHL and this team that needs to be taken down? Or is it, you know, are people seeing the Canadiens as they're way too full of themselves? It's absolutely pathetic. Somebody needs to take them down a notch.
Well, I mean, Montreal is an interesting case because Montreal is a team that everyone, I mean, outside of, you know, Montreal is a Montreal Canadiens fan. The Montreal Canadiens sort of represent what every other team in the NHL kind of wants to be. Steeped in lore, you know, wonderful history. The Hockey Hall of Fame is littered with their members. Stanley Cups, you know, out the door and around the corner. And the sense of a reverence for the past that doesn't get buried in itself. I mean, you look at the way that the Maple Leafs celebrate their past, it's almost like quicksand that holds them back, but not the Montreal Canadiens. And then it's been said before, and I think rightfully so, there's only two places on the earth, really, that do ceremonies properly. One is Buckingham Palace, and the other is the Bell Centre in Montreal. And I really think that that's true. I think that every other franchise wishes they had this one specific moment. And I always tell people, if you haven't been to a game in Montreal, you have to be at the Bell Centre on a Saturday night at 7 o'clock. Yeah, everyone has to have that experience. And until you've had it, you can't describe it. Like, it's like trying to explain jazz. I can't describe it in words. You have to experience it for yourself. But there is nothing like the experience of being in Montreal, whether you used to go to the Forum or you're now going to the Bell Center, of being there right before puck drop when the players come out and the anthem is sung and the game is about to happen. There is, they call it, you know, the ghost of the Forum or whatever you want to call it. There is no better energy in any hockey rink I've ever been at, or I believe anywhere around the world, and the energy you get at the Bell Center on a Saturday night when that game is about to start. And every team wishes they had that. And that breeds a lot of envy. And where you see envy, I think in a lot of places you see contempt, because there's a lot of anger directed towards the Montreal Canadiens. Let's just be honest about this. And I think a lot of it is sort of misplaced in that the hatred is sort of, it's almost this weird sort of mixing pot of hatred and envy. And, you know, this sense that Montreal is full of itself, but damn it, I wish we were the same way. I wish we could talk about our hockey team the way Montreal Canadiens fans can talk about theirs, and also do so with credibility. And also, we're still very much having, you know, one foot, you know, as much as there's one foot in the past, there's still a strong foot being placed forward for the future. So I think it's there's a lot of hatred. There's a lot of envy. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, get a bad taste in their mouth about the Montreal Canadiens and anything that they do. Oh, they're complaining. Oh, they're whiners. Look at the other, calling the cops on defensemen with the Boston Bruins and making a mockery of themselves. They take the game way too seriously. Every molehill is a mountain. But I think secretly, guys, every other NHL team wishes they could have what the Montreal Canadiens have.
So, speaking of round two, so the Habs, you know, made pretty quick work of the Lightning in round one, but it was against a backup goalie. Yeah. The Bruins, meanwhile, have been basically the best team in the NHL since day one. Montreal's had some success against Boston this season, but it's a pretty small sample size. Outside of the anything can happen, it's the playoffs. Does Montreal have a shot in this series, or are we looking at it through Blue Blanc Rouge tinted glasses?
No. They have a shot. I mean, I don't think they come out of this one, but they certainly have a shot. I think a lot of it comes down to certainly the goaltender. I mean, Carey Price. What could he do to follow up a gold medal, bud? Well, this would be a big one. I mean, a lot of it comes down to, you know, opportunistic scoring. You know, at the end of it, Montreal, you know, the stereotype is still true, although they are getting bigger. This is still a smallish team, and the Boston Bruins, as you saw against the Red Wings, you know, have taken great delight in pounding down the protruding nail of smaller teams. But, you know, let me say one thing. The one thing about the Boston Bruins, and you make a lot about Tuukka Rask and a lot about Zdeno Chara and a lot about Patrice Bergeron, those three players that may come back with significant hardware at the end of the season, and the Selke Trophy, the Norris Trophy, and the goaltender of the year, the Vezina. But when you look at the blue line, like if you didn't try to find one place to exploit, you know, Chara's a really good defenseman, but you get to Matt Barkowski pretty, not a slight against Matt Barkowski, but in stretch, but you get to a guy like Matt Barkowski pretty fast in the depth chart when you're looking at the Boston Bruins. Like, if there's one area that I think you can exploit, it is the blue line. Now, the one thing about Boston and Montreal is, listen, more than any of us, they're well aware of it, they play these guys on the ice. The Boston Bruins play a very sophisticated defensive system. They don't chase. They refuse to chase in their own zone. It is a very positionally sound defense. They play sort of all within the dots. They don't chase to the corners. They don't chase behind the net. They are instructed. You get this in Providence as well with Bruce Cassidy, the American Hockey League team. That's why defensemen can make the transition, you know, seamlessly. They don't chase you around your own zone. So you almost have to make the perfect pass, the perfect play, the perfect zone entry in order to get a leg up on the Boston Bruins. But, as I mentioned, it is a hard way to play. In order to think that way, it goes against a lot of hockey players' instincts. So if there's one area, as crazy as it may sound, if there's one area that I think Montreal can exploit, whether it's with, you know, speed, whether it's skill, or whether it's Brendan Gallagher, I think it's the blue line where the Montreal Canadiens could die out here.
This was a question we had for ourselves last week, and I want to throw it your way now. We were wondering, are the Montreal Canadiens the only chance the Boston Bruins will get stopped coming out of the East?
Oh, great question. Let's see. They can beat Pittsburgh and can beat them pretty soundly, specifically with that netminder. Getting bodies in front of Marc-Andre Fleury, if the Penguins make it that far, I think will be the unraveling of him. I like the way they match up against the Rangers, although it seems to be something different about the Rangers this year. Maybe you call that the Martin-St. Louis effect. I think the Boston Bruins take them out. So given how they match up and given that, you know, when you look at the game not on the ice but between the years, you know, psychologically in a lot of ways, you know, I still think there is that hurdle for the Boston Bruins. You know, no matter how many times they may beat them or reach them out in the playoffs, I think there's still a psychological barrier for the Boston Bruins in that they represent their toughest competition or their toughest out in the Eastern Conference. So this is a very long-winded way of saying I agree, but I do a podcast every day for an hour, so I kind of have to say a lot of words. So I'll say Montreal, because the psychological factor more than anything else, I think Montreal does represent the toughest out for the Boston Bruins.
Last question from me, Jeff. So the big storyline, I guess you could say, Rask versus Price. Rask generally considered the best goalie in the world. Price is in the conversation top five, at least. could you make the argument that this series is for sort of for the heavyweight championship of the world? I mean, if Price goes gold medal and then Eastern Conference final appearance or Stanley Cup final appearance, does he maybe snag that title away from Rask, especially if he, you know, goes on a tear and lets in 8 goals in 7 games or whatever it is?
Yeah, that would mean that would be remarkable. That would be sort of, you know, Ken Dryden, Patrick Waugh-esque, if he turns into that goaltender. But, you know, let's not forget here, you know, the background for Carey Price. I'm sure he was successful at the World Junior, very successful at Hamilton, as we all know. But, you know, he hasn't really gone into deep water in the playoffs yet. So this is still, even though, you know, he has the gold medal hanging around his neck this season and turned in a great performance in Sochi, there's still a lot of question marks about Carey Price. And if he's able to tread water or, you know, lo and behold, swim in deep water, we don't know. We think the potential is there. He's a quality athlete. He has good size. His fundamentals are solid. Like, everything is there for Carey Price. You're just waiting for him to put it all together at the most crucial time. And we're getting now to that point where this is our first shot at the NHL level in the playoffs to really see what the Montreal Canadiens have here as far as the playoff netminder goes. So this is enough rope right now, guys, for Carey Price. Enough rope for him to either swing to success or completely hang himself. I think it's all up to Carey Price to decide that.
Ominous, a very ominous way to end this interview. But
thank you. A little bit graphic for the audience, but I figure your crowd can handle it.
You open so gloriously. You're praising us, and then you end with the hanging of Carey Price.
Hey, it's his choice. I mean, there's the new. You can use it, you know, you can use it as a lasso, or you can use it as a noose. Take your pick.
That's fair. Here's hoping for the former. Thank you so much, Jeff. great fans on our part, and so we appreciate so much you having the time for us. Thanks a lot, and we look forward to you next season on Hockey Night in Canada.
Thanks very much. Listen, call me anytime. Love to come back on with you, boys.
We will. Thanks a lot. You introduced him well. I have to give you credit there.
Well, I basically stole the intro that he does every day on MVSW, so.
Well, you know what they say. Thievery is the best way to get things.
That old
expression. They say in some corners.
I'm sure they do.
I'm rocking to this right now. I'm sorry if I seem like I'm not concentrating, but I'm just into this band. They're like an unpracticed pavement.
That's all right. I can deal with that.
I just mostly meant they're making noise. I don't really know what else is happening. Let's get into a 12-pack here. Question one for you. Carey Price versus Tuukka Rask. Who you got your money on? Not which team comes out of this, but literally Battle of the Goalies.
I'm the biggest Carey Price supporter there is, but if I was a betting man and you put a gun to my head, you do have to go with Rask. The guy's going to win the Vezina this year. He's widely regarded as the best goalie in the world, and on top of that, he's got Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron playing in front of him. So, again, Price is in the discussion for best goalie in the world. He's certainly in the top five. But if you were going to poll 1,000 NHL fans, you know, across all the markets, the vague consensus would be that Rask is probably the best in the world. So, Price could probably steal, like we talked about with Marek. Price could maybe steal that title with a surprising, you know, commanding performance, but the money's got to be on Rask, right?
I don't know that the money would have to be on Rask, because Vegas likes to look at some outside things once in a while. And the fact that Rask has been so horrible against Montreal, even if the money was still on Rask, it definitely brings it down. I mean, Tuukka has not played well. And of all the Bruins that they might be in the head of the most, it might be Tuukka.
That's a good point. That is a very good point.
So, I mean, I'm being a little contrarian here. I think if the smart money would be on Rask, and then you think about the team that he's got out in front of him. But head-to-head, Carey Price, much better in terms of these guys actually going toe-to-toe. Carey Price has a much better record. And then Tuukka, just against Montreal, because Budaj's had a few starts in there, has not ever been even close to impressive, actually. Definitely, by far, the worst team he has played against. Almost the opposite of Vanek, who owns the Bruins. Tuukka Rask really struggles against the Canadiens. Those are kind of combinations that we have to put our money on if we want to see, if we hope to see anything good come out of this series for us.
Number two, the one word you would use to describe the Bruins universe is blank.
I went with brute. And I looked it up, and I researched the word well because I wanted to really answer this question to my best of my abilities. Brute, as defined by multiple dictionaries here, is a little combination, is a savagely violent person or animal, unreasoning and animal-like, something awkward, difficult, or unpleasant, as well as merely physical, harsh, fundamental, and inescapable. I think that encompasses the Bruins, and plus BRU is right in both names. So brute is the one word I would use, and also a little extra tidbit for you here, derives from Latin brutus, which means dull and stupid. So I'm going with brute for the Bruins.
Well played. That's better than my answer. I went with hypocritical.
It works too.
That works too. And I mean, listen, to be a sports fan is to almost sort of be inherently hypocritical about a lot of things. But I really do feel that Bruins fans sort of take it to a whole nother level.
Yep.
There's a weird combination that, you know, on the one hand, they really like to see themselves, as I wrote this week on the website, as sort of, you know, the last vanguards against the wussification of the league. They're the exemplars of old time hockey. They stand for everything that's right with the sport and true with the sport. And, you know, they can commit no wrong. Mm-hmm. If Scott Thornton slew foots a man from behind and pile drives his skull into the ice, that's all part of the game. But how many times have you heard Bruins fans bitch and moan? Rightfully so, but how many times have you heard Bruins fans bitch and moan about Matt Cook?
That's all they do.
And listen, that was a brutal hit, but is there any doubt in anyone's mind that if Matt Cook was a Bruins player, he'd be the most celebrated Bruins player of his generation?
I'd be the great one. Best thing that ever happened, and they'd be apologist for the mistakes he's made, and they'd also argue the whole cleaned up his act thing. I mean, it'd just be it'd be a Matt Cook loving. He'd be Jack Edwards' favorite player.
I mean, he is the most Bruins player in the NHL, and they just happen to hate him because he took out one of their guys. But I mean, there's a reason that the Bruins are involved in so many of these incidents. It's because the chickens come home to roost. I mean, don't be surprised when other teams get overly physical with you when your entire persona is based on pummeling teams into the ground. So I just find this whole mixture that the Bruins universe has of, you know, we can do whatever we want to any other team, and it's old-time hockey, but if you lay a finger on us, it's a crime against humanity. Of all the things that I find exasperating about the Bruins, that's easily number one on the list.
Oh, they're no doubt the definition of hypocrites. Like, that's really what it is. It is, if you can support one side of the Bruins, be it the violent, no guts, no glory Bruins who leave it all on the ice, skirt the line of safety, decency. That's one thing. That's that's the broad street hockey of the old days that we saw the Flyers win some cups with. And that's the Flyers, I think, at least stood by it. The Bruins are fine with it when it's them executing. But as soon as anybody turns on them for one second, I mean, they're the ultimate victims in the world. And that's really, you're right, that's completely the most infuriating thing about this team, is they play one way, and if you try and play that way, they fucking cry about it immediately, or if you counter their ability to play that way, they bitch about it immediately. I mean, the Bruins don't like being beaten at their own game. That they're so take my ball and go home. I've almost never seen a pro sport team to this immature, to be honest. I mean, that sounds like I'm getting a little carried away, but it really, to that point, it's really, you don't play the way we want to play, we're just going to cry about it.
I mean, I think their hypocrisy was summed up today when Brad Marchand accused PK Subban of being a dirty player.
There you go.
I mean, if Brad Marchand is going to accuse anyone in the league of anything, that's a franchise that reeks of hypocrisy.
I'm so glad we named the Douche of the Week after him for this series, because he already won it again. So I'm glad gave him that title. And we haven't played a game yet, and he's earned it already. Brad Marchand, he's impressive in his own right. Question 3. Your team is playing one game for all the marbles. Which one of the following players are you going to pick, Mr. O'Neill? You got Sidney Crosby, you got Evgeny Malkin, you got Jonathan Toews, and Patrick Kane. Couple teammates in there. What are we going with?
They're really rocking out downstairs.
Oh, they're killing it. Just killing it.
Like a young Steely Dan. It's so tempting to go with Toews. He's so friggin' good, and he's such a good all-around player, and he's so clutch. But even if he's making up some ground in the best player in the world conversation, Sidney Crosby is still the best player in the world. It's not even all that close.
No, it's not.
You give me one guy to go with, I'm gonna go with Crosby. Even though Taves' track record, especially in big games, is probably better. I'm gonna take Crosby every time.
What about the big game goals from Patrick Kane?
I know. Yeah, Kane too.
Patrick Kane, I mean, he's becoming the David Ortiz of the NHL. I think we talked about this last season. He's already had another overtime game winner since then. You got to give Patrick Kane some love. I understand why Malkin's off the list. I mean, he had a hat trick the other day, so who are we to do second guess of Genny Malkin? I tell you what, I've got written Jonathan Toews down here, but the more I thought about it as I came into this, I think I still go with Sidney Crosby, and I was going to say a good bit of evidence is that is the two gold medal games where that's essentially the case, but guess who else has scored in those two games?
Yeah, Toews showed up for those ones too.
So I don't know then. But almost flip a coin between those two. I think Toews might almost give you more leadership if we're, you know, on that stupid intangible thing. But
yeah, I mean, that's such a nebulous concept, but I think there's some truth to that.
Well, this is what I'm saying. If I'm feeling like it's a tough call, I may lean towards Toews. Toews has two Stanley Cups. Sidney's got one.
If you think about Jonathan Toews' war chest, I mean, he's got, at this point already, two World Juniors, two gold medals, two Stanley Cups, a Conn Smythe, an Olympic MVP, a Selke trophy, and I believe a World Junior MVP as well.
Yep.
And there's plenty more to come. He's clearly not as talented all around as Crosby, but I've made this point before. I think Toews is becoming the Derek Jeter of the NHL.
He could have another Stanley Cup by the time the season's over, and I don't think that's the case for Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Well, let's
Toews,
move it.
Toews is going to be one of those guys. I mean, he's never even going to come close to winning, you know, the Richard or the Art Ross. Probably will never win a Hart because his point totals aren't going to be up there. Yeah. But he'll, you know, he might retire with four cups and three gold medals and three Selkies and just, you know, one of those just accolade after accolade after accolade after accolade. I really think he's kind of, like I said, a Jeter-esque type guy who was never, you know, never the single most talented player in baseball, but retired with a pretty lengthy rap sheet.
This goes right into question four. It's the same kind of thing we're talking about, so we'll see if there's a difference. It's same question, same players, but this time it's a best of seven. Does that change? I mean, since you answered Sidney Crosby, I'm going to assume it doesn't.
No, whether it's single game, best of season, or best of seven for an entire season for the next 10 years, if you throw all the sticks in the middle, I'm going to take Crosby every time.
If I was leaning maybe a little bit towards Toews for number three, for number four, I would definitely go Sidney Crosby. I don't think there's as much debate for me in that. Just because of the fact is, when you're playing multiple games, you want simply the best player possible. And Sidney Crosby presents that. I mean, as much as we just praise Toews, I still think there's more than a little bit of room for Jonathan Toews to make up on Sidney Crosby for best player in the world status. The fact is he's simply not going to pull it off, barring a major injury to Crosby. And if it's a best of seven, even if Toews' rap sheet is very impressive, and it is, Sidney Crosby isn't terrible either.
No, it's
not. And the fact is, he's the best player in the world. If you're playing multiple games, when you come right down to it, give me the best player in the world, no matter what, you know, intangible qualities the other may have, and even some very tangible qualities, I'll take the best in the world if it's a best of seven. And this is a little bit to talk about what I said last week, and you quickly disagreed with me, saying, I don't know, this isn't really Sidney Crosby's fault with happening to the Penguins. Watching those games a little more closely since then, Sidney's playing great hockey. There's nothing, you know, put Jonathan Toews on that team and it's probably the same. Put anybody on that team and it's the same struggles. It's just the fact that there's a few giant holes in the Penguins. And as we say over and over on this podcast, I think maybe Crosby's being robbed a little bit of his potential to, you know, if he had the surrounding, the support staff that Jonathan Toews has, they might even be three Stanley Cups in Chicago already. You know, not to take anything away from what the Blackhawks have done these past few years, but I'm just trying to say, like, it's not Crosby's fault, and you switch those two guys, and then we don't probably even have this conversation. Jonathan Toews, if he doesn't have that support staff, we probably don't even consider him as close to Sidney Crosby as we do already.
I think that's fair.
I'm a fair man.
I've always said that.
Which leads us nicely to the next one.
remember that old game, Fuck, Marry, Kill?
Old game? I play it daily in the staff in the old office room.
Really emphasized the curse word in that question.
you did.
Bruins fuck edition. Zdeno Chara, Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand. You got to fuck one, you got to marry one, you got
to
kill one.
I'm glad you explained it to the folks at home who'd never played Fuck, Marry, Kill before. this is a good one. This is tough. The opposite of Sophie's Choice, really. I'll start with Mary, because that's the nicest place to start. I'm going to go with Zdeno Chara. As much as I don't like him on the ice, he seems like a pretty nice guy off the ice. And there's a lot to love. There's a lot of man there to love. He'll protect me, so I'm going to marry Zdeno Chara. Kill Milan Lucic, because that guy, I don't trust him. I maybe dislike him more than anyone in the NHL. I'd like to get rid of him. And fuck, I'm going to go with Marchand. A, he's a little dude. And B, fuck that guy.
So we have similar taste in men in
that's
terms
good.
Of
well,
who
we that.
Settle down
We
with.
Knew that, though. Ever since that night where we discussed Denzel Washington for 4 hours, we knew that.
I would also marry Big Zed, because I do have a sneaking suspicion that off the ice he's not a horrible human being. So I'll go with, I'm going to marry Chara.
That's
I'm
nice.
Going to, I'm going to fuck Milan Lucic, because, I don't know, he's a big, brawny, rough guy, okay. And I think I'd like that. And I would kill Brad Marchand, because he's probably my least favorite NHL player of all time.
All right, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Glad we did that. I'm glad that's
yeah,
out there.
I'm not sure I am.
No, nobody's happy about any of what happened there. We're moving quickly on to question six. Maybe we'll never play that game again. Maybe we
maybe
will.
That's all
we'll play. Except maybe that's just, this is no longer called the 2-4. This is Fuck, Marry, Kill, NHL. We'd probably get more listeners if we did that podcast. We may have to rebrand ourselves. Question six. Which pre-game seven? Oh, no, this, sorry, I didn't rewrite this. Which eliminated club has the most upside?
So it depends what you mean by that. Do you mean for this year, or which team that's been knocked out has the best long-term future?
Whatever you want. I don't care. We just played Fuck, Marry, Kill. I don't need to be too serious here.
If it's this year, whoever loses tonight, the winner of that LA San Jose, you know, as bad as the Sharks have looked blowing this 3-0 lead, it's entirely possible that they could have won the cup if they didn't play LA in the first round. They might still, but you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
Everyone would have been happy if that had been the Stanley Cup final, let alone a first round matchup. So the best team to get eliminated in round one is whichever team loses tonight out on the West Coast. Long term, Dallas has the most upside. We saw this year that they're not quite there yet. They're not quite ready, but man, Seguin, Ben, Nikushkin is a hell of a core.
That is a good upside. That's some solid upside. I went with Tampa Bay, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, they got two Calder nominees.
Yeah.
Hedman's come into his own. Smart young coach. And Steven Stamkos is there. Not to mention they've shed their two ancients in LeCavalier and St. Louis. Now, St. Louis obviously still contributing big time, actually, to the Rangers in these playoffs. But what I thought might be kind of the weight on the back of the Lightning going forward with all this young talent that they'd brought in was going to be maybe St. Louis' contract. He's bound to age at some point, I would assume. But they managed to, LeCavalier they bought out, and now St. Louis they've dealt, and I don't necessarily know that helped them this year, but I think there's a lot of upside in that Tampa Bay team. If Bishop can continue to be the player that he was this year, that team could be contending in a couple seasons, I think.
And don't forget, they've got Jonathan Drouin coming up, too.
That's not bad.
They had two Calder nominees this year, and neither of them was the guy who was the number three pick in the draft.
That's
last
very
year.
True. It's an excellent point. So glad I picked Tampa Bay.
Stamkos, Drouin, that's not too shabby.
No.
You wonder if they should have gone with Jones, but either way, that's not too shabby.
Yeah, it kind of puts him in, I mean, at this point, it seems like it puts him in the same position going forward.
And we haven't even mentioned Victor Hedman either.
Well, I did, but you don't listen to me, so.
Well, there's that.
Is it because you're listening to this sweet, sweet rock? Jam it, boys.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamming I'm away.
Way too distracted by your downstairs neighbors.
I wish I knew what they were called. I don't know what they're called.
Moving on. Number
you
seven.
Sure you want to move on? I want to talk about this.
It's an interesting question. Would the NHL have lowered the hammer on an owner the way the NBA did with Donald Sterling?
I'm going to start by saying I also didn't expect the NBA to do what it did. So to say I wouldn't expect the NHL to do it is more, I think, still where I'm at in terms of expectation in reaction to this kind of thing from these corporate, I don't know, what are the major sports leagues outside of, you know, just major sports leagues? They operate in this very weird world where they're multiple corporations all under one sort of leadership that has some power, also it's sort of political. And it's tough to be commissioner is a tough gig, and because there's a lot of to quote the dude, there's a lot of ins and outs. But so I was really surprised that the NBA even reacted this strongly. All that to say, I don't know that the NHL would. And for one thing, I mean, you look at the fan base of hockey and look at the players in hockey, and it's probably in the society, we're probably not going to elicit the same reaction from the hockey world. And, you know, you can disagree with me, but I think that's probably true. So I would say I wouldn't expect necessarily the NHL to react in the same way. But once again, let me say, I didn't expect the NBA to react that way, and I'm still kind of shocked that they did. So, you know, that's my two cents on that, I guess.
Yeah, my initial gut reaction is no. And for the reason that you said that, I mean, the players thing is a big, big thing. I mean, the NBA
huge.
Was
they
facing
were,
the prospect
oh, yeah.
that, you know, players might boycott games if they didn't really throw the hammer down.
Yeah.
Whereas in the NHL, I don't think any, you know, no one would be supportive of the comments by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it would be seen more as something that's unfortunate and unforgivable, but I don't know if players would be...
Well, there'd be no risk that the players were not going to play playoff games.
Yeah. Exactly. I think, but you know, there would be a backlash by
oh,
fans
definitely.
And by media and by sponsors.
Sponsors for sure.
My gut reaction was to say no, but I mean, you just look at how quick the reaction was against Sterling. I'm starting to wonder if we move to a place where, you know, thankfully those comments are just unforgivable by an owner in any of the four major sport leagues.
Well, it definitely seemed. I mean, did you expect it from the NBA? Did you expect them to come down that hard on Sterling?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, really?
I think it had gotten to the point where, I mean, it had gotten to the point where, again, players were talking about boycotting, sponsors were pulling out left and right. It was just dominating not only the ESPN news cycle, but like this was front page of the New York Times type stuff.
That's fair.
So yeah, and not to mention the fact that I think they wanted that guy out there for a long, long time.
Yeah, this gave them reason.
Gun.
Exactly.
I was happy to see them come down the way they did, but I wasn't shocked. I kind of figured that was in the offing.
Well, I found it jaw dropping, to be honest. When I saw it, I was quite surprised. I didn't expect a slap on the wrist, which I mean, like 10 years ago, you would have got a slap on the wrist for
yeah.
your comments like that. I mean, what you say is very true. We've come a long way, and perhaps we have hit the tipping point now where, or I guess we have hit the tipping point, at least as far as the NBA is concerned, where that kind of thing just, it's not going to be tolerated because of, first and foremost, I mean, it's the money that talks. And if Donald Sterling had been somebody else who didn't have this reputation, that might have changed things as well. But, you know, if you put the same situation on the NHL, my gut, as you say, is that no, it wouldn't. But my gut was that the NBA wouldn't. So, I hope that we've come past that point that you referenced, a point where this can't happen anymore, and you know, the reaction from the leagues will be as strong as the NBA set out against. I mean, that's stern as hell, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if it'd be as strong. I mean, like $2.5 million on a lifetime ban and being forced to sell the team that's a steep price. Maybe the NHL wouldn't go quite there, but I don't think it'd be a slap on the wrist either. I think we'd be talking about, you know, an owner who wouldn't be welcome to league events from this point forward, and a hefty fine and that type of stuff.
Poor guy's only going to make $189 million off his extremely racist comments. Question 8. Getting back to Habs and Bruins, which we're less than 24 hours away from now, Mr. O'Neill. You feeling okay about that?
I'm okay.
How much total time before the first bit of nastiness in this series.
I think my prognostication last episode that it would happen within the first 10 minutes.
Oh, have you backed off from that?
That might be a slight over-exaggeration, but I don't think we get through the first period without something. I mean, it might not be a line brawl. It might not be Press versus Thornton, but there'll be a four-minute major, or there'll be a dirty stick, or there'll be a dive, or there'll be a scrum in front of the net, and things will snowball from there. I don't think they go through the first period without getting their uniforms dirty.
I put 6 minutes as the over-under.
Yeah.
I don't know where Vegas would have it, but I feel 6 minutes is about right, because it could also be 2 minutes in. Are we going to learn something about the Bruins in the first period, about what kind of hockey they might be preparing to play? Because I've got to think Claude Julien is smart enough to trying to talk this very talented team into playing intelligent hockey and keeping their heads level throughout this series, because they can win if they will win if they do that.
If the Bruins are visibly frustrated and playing stupid hockey in the first period of game one, then Montreal's winning this series.
I think I agree with that.
I don't think they're going to unravel that quickly. I think it might be more of a slow burn, but if it's that obvious that quickly, if it's that apparent, then Montreal's winning.
But you have to think they're going into this series trying not to lose their cool.
Yeah, but I think, when you play on as thin of an edge as they always do, it's a pretty thin line between playing that system and just, I think when things unravel, they go downhill quickly.
How much do you think the Canadians are trying, or have it as part of their game plan to get under their skin? Like, are they talking about this?
I don't know. That's a great question, and I'm not sure.
You're supposed to have all the answers.
I don't know if they talk about it, or if it's more of a unspoken agreement that you're, you just got to piss these guys off. But I don't know if it's part of the game plan per se, but I think in the back of their heads, they all know we got to get under these guys' skins. We got to get them off their game.
They also can't get distracted with that, though. They also have to play the way they played against Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
I think if the Canadians actually, what might be the most frustrating thing for the Boston Bruins is if the Canadians play the way they played against Tampa Bay and try and come out and play that kind of hockey, the frustrating thing is that what the Bruins try and do doesn't work. And I think sometimes that's what frustrates the Bruins more than anything, is the Canadians seemingly having success and not necessarily falling into the trap. And then that quickly, then they get pissed off at Gallagher and they get pissed off at Subban, and that quickly escalates into them becoming very frustrated and angry because they're brutes, as I said off the top. And that's maybe a little bit where their problems kick in. I don't understand how these professionals who play probably the best hockey of anybody in the NHL right now can watch everything crumble away because they can't keep their emotions in check for Game 7 against an opponent that, by all estimations, is not nearly as good.
Yeah, it's perplexing, and if they see a potential Stanley Cup sort of wither away because they can't keep that in check, that would be troubling.
We should get to them right off. If it was started in Montreal, I think they got a real good chance of getting in there right on against them, because that crowd changes everything. But on the other hand, that Boston crowd just wants blood so quickly that I think the Bruins feed off that a little bit too.
They feed off that, and as much as Habs players get under Boston players' skin, they get under the crowd's skin tenfold. And I think you're right. I think there's a bit of a symbiotic relationship where, the crowd sees injustices left and right, and, the team's trying to make up for them, and they're trying to play to the crowd, and they get off their game, and things go downhill.
We're talking about the first 20 minutes now. What do you want to see between 7:30 and 7:55 on Thursday from the Canadians?
I think what you said is a good point, is that, on the one hand, the sort of ace up the sleeve that Montreal has is their seeming ability to piss off the Bruins and to get under their skin, but that can't be the game plan. Like you said, if that happens, that's almost a bonus, and they do have players that are sort of good at rattling the cage, but I want to see them come out and play just sort of, smart, disciplined, high-speed hockey, like we saw against Tampa Bay.
I think that's the best way, is just to take hockey to Boston right off and see what happens. Because I think there's still something interesting if a straight-up hockey game breaks out between these teams instead of the straight-up war that we're all calling for. I think the Bruins have the clear advantage if that happens. But I also think it could be a very entertaining series, even if, you know, the blood doesn't boil as much as some of us, most of us, all of us perhaps, are expecting it to.
Yeah, there's the psychological aspect, but Montreal is well served by using their speed against Boston.
Yes,
it's the one sort of on-ice advantage that they have. So, with, you know, they did that well against Tampa. I'd like to see that, you know, even increased against Boston. If they can use that speed and get around Chara and, you know, get a lot of sort of some nice rushes and some nice entries into the Boston zone, that's beneficial.
This takes us to question 9. What is Montreal's biggest weakness in this series?
Well, A, they're just significantly less talented than Boston.
I wrote down talent as well.
Yeah. I mean, not Montreal's a talented team. They might be one of the, I don't know, 10 or 12 most talented rosters in the league. But Boston's number one or two.
Yeah, I would.
Three at the absolute worst.
Absolute worst.
I think you can. So there's just a sheer gap in talent. And then the other weakness is that, you know, Boston, A, they're talented, and B, like we said, against every other team except Montreal, they play that system to a T. Like I said last week, watching them just execute it, it's like watching Team Canada, where they just smother opponents with their size and their speed and just their transition game. All of it is incredible to watch. So I think Boston just has a clear gap in talent, and they use that talent perfectly.
No, I have talent as well, and for all the reasons you said. I mean, if it comes right down to which team is the better straight up hockey team, if they don't have to face each other, I don't think anyone says Montreal. And you'd be wrong if you did. The Boston Bruins are the better hockey team. But that doesn't mean it's going to shake out that way. That's obvious. That's the biggest weakness, is the fact that they're a weaker hockey team.
Conversely, number 10, what is Boston's biggest weakness in the series?
Like we've been talking about this whole time, I think themselves. I think the Boston Bruins are the only thing that can get in their way, their own way, against the Canadiens. But I also think that's the biggest hurdle they have to get over is themselves. And I don't just mean jumping Zdeno Chara. I mean, you know, if they can't keep it in check, if they let the Canadiens get under their skin and in their heads like they've had a tendency to do, I mean, historically, throughout most of the history of these two teams, but, you know, even in the recent history in which the Boston Bruins have had more success against the Canadiens than they ever had in their entire history, the Canadiens are still seen as the biggest problem for the Bruins, and they're still able to get under their skin. As we said in the last question, if it comes down to who's better, who's got more talent, the Boston Bruins should probably win this in about 5 games, maybe 6 at most. But they'll get in their own way. If they can stay out of their own way, I think they probably, you might even steamroll over the Habs. But it's not like, you know, some teams stay out of their own way means... I think the Chicago Blackhawks, in a way, have to stay out of their own way. But it's not so problematic for them. They know how to do that. They've done it before. The Boston Bruins, when it comes to the Canadiens, 99 times out of 100, it seems these days, even when the Bruins win, it's difficult for them to win because they get themselves in trouble with the mind games. They're playing the mind games with themselves more than the Habs are playing.
I think it's that, and I think, like I said, it's the lack of speed. And I think if Montreal can turn this into a track meet, they have a chance. Because Boston's big, and they're smart, and they are a fast team, but they're not fast in the way that Montreal is fast, with the small, shifty, speedy guys who can, you know, bring the puck into the zone and force that defense to chase them around a little bit.
I'm very interested in the fourth lines in these series, especially considering the Canadiens have Danny Briere on their fourth line. I mean, that could make or break the series, the fourth line.
It could, especially... You know, the Mo and Bourneval, what direction the team decides to go in with that is going to tell us a lot as well.
That's true. I hadn't even thought about that, but that will tell us a lot of with who they go with. I mean, Moen just might not even still be able to play. Yeah, I think he probably is, but we don't know for sure. But yeah, that'll indicate a lot in terms of direction, because if you can fly out there with that fourth line with the speed that at least Bourneval and we spring to the tail. I mean, Briere's not so speedy, but he's such a great puck handler when he's got a little room that, you know, it all falls into place. They could pose more problems for the Boston Bruins than the Pacioretty-Vanek line, really.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but...
I mean, matchup-wise.
You know, I said last week that I thought Moen should probably get the nod over Bourneval just because of his experience, because he does bring it in the playoffs. But I think I've changed my mind on that. You know, I think if you're putting Moen in there, you're putting him in there because you want to sort of
play the Bruins hockey.
Play Bruins hockey, and you're not gonna beat them at their own game. But Bornville might be the fastest player on the Habs roster.
I think Weiss is
at least amongst the forwards. Him or Weiss? Yeah, Weiss is probably faster, but Bornville's got some wheels.
Yeah, they're probably the two fastest, and that's our fourth line.
Yeah, and yeah, the more I think about it, I think, you know, having Bornival's speed out there and representing what that means for the team, meaning, you know, we're not going to try and beat you at your own game. We're going to try and beat you with our speed and our skill. I think that's probably the preferred route.
That's where I'd like to have Galchenyuk out there.
Yeah.
Prust is not exactly Alex Galchenyuk. Stating the obvious here. Question 11. Thomas Vanek, Milan Lucic. Who finishes with more points? Milan's on a tear.
I'll go with Vanek. That might be the Hab fan in me speaking. That being said, Vanek kind of seems like he's due to wake up a little bit, and he is a noted Bruins killer. So I think just the sheer math of it, I think Vanek is about ready to go on a bit of a tear. That being said, Lucic looked fantastic against Detroit, like kind of like he did last year, Game 7 against Toronto. Like, he looks like a Conn Smythe winner right now. I'm gonna go with Vanek, but it's a toss up.
I think Lucic is going to be shut down by the Canadians because he generally is. He may score, you know, a few goals here and there. I don't think we're going to see what we saw from him in the Detroit series. Plekanec and company shut him down quite well. Thomas Vanek, as you say, feels ready to go off to me. So for that reason, I'm going to pick Vanek, and also, you know, as you alluded to, a Bruins killer. As you were talking about that, I feel like the Canadian season's been, like, we're on a vacation from it. It's almost weird to be thinking about they're going to be hitting the ice again tomorrow, finally. It's been a long interlude.
It feels like the Olympic break all over again.
I feel like I shook out of it. It's going to be interesting to see what happens for the players themselves. It's going to take 10 minutes, but at least the Bruins have been waiting as well.
Yeah, I'm still not sure what to make of that. You know, if rest is better, if it's better to just kind of keep on rolling. But the one thing you can say is that these teams aren't on equal footing. Mm-hmm. Which brings us to the big one, number 12. Who wins?
I want to say Montreal. My heart wants to say Montreal. But If you made me put my life savings on this, all $12, I got to pick the Bruins. They looked really good against Detroit. I think Montreal's going to give them a run. And, you know, there's a very good chance the Canadians beat them for everything that we've been saying, for what Merrick said. But this Bruins team looks poised and ready. And if I remove myself from fandom entirely, and, you know, if I came at it as neutral as possible and had to put money on somebody, I'd have it on the Bruins.
I'm going Habs in seven, but as you alluded to, that's obviously more with my heart than with my head.
That's what I wanted.
I'm gonna take the leap. I'm gonna say Habs in seven. I mean, part of it's just that, you know, to go to this would be what, three finals appearances in 4 years?
Yeah.
That's really damn hard to do, and part of me just thinks that the law of averages, the Bruins are almost, you know, due for a loss.
That's fair.
I'm going to go with Montreal, but that's clearly a bit of a homer pick because Boston is the better team. Boston seems like they're on a collision course to the Stanley Cup final. They've been the best team in the NHL basically since day one. The smart pick is Boston, but why the hell not? I'm going to go Montreal in seven.
Attaboy. I'm glad you went second. Need that around here. Looking ahead, do we know anything besides 7:30 on Thursday at this point?
Wake up early because Saturday at noon is game two.
I like that you said wake up early for noon, which I will have to set an alarm. Sure did. I will have to set an alarm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Nearly 30 years old. Good job, us. Can't believe we host a podcast. So there you go. I don't like that. I don't like that. Game one, 7:30. And then 6:30 a.m. or something like that on Saturday morning before the cartoons start. 1-2 for
Boston.
It's
like the gold medal game all over again.
It's exactly the same. Exactly the same. Rennie Rancourt be out there. So I know we just predicted on who wins the series, but we need another gaze into the crystal ball. I hope it's as positive as your series prediction. What's your prognostication?
I feel weirdly confident about how the first two games are going to play out. For some reason, I mean, Montreal, I know the series doesn't really start until you take one, you know, until the home team loses one. So we could go down 2-0 and it's not the end of the world, but I don't think Montreal's sweeping at home for one. And just psychologically, I think if Montreal goes down 2-0, they're in trouble. So they got to win one of those first two, and I think they will. I have a feeling they're going to come out firing in game one. And I could see them winning game one something like 4-1, 5-2.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be a relatively comfortable win. I think, you know, Vanek scores 2 minutes in, Subban scores 5 minutes later, and they're off and running. And then I think the Bruins counter that 36 hours later. I think Rask shuts the door, shutout win, and we're all knotted up at one apiece going back to Montreal.
My God, what happened to you, man?
I know. I don't know. I have this. I'm oddly confident about this extremely precise prediction.
You've become so bold.
I know.
I like it. Mine...
So blowout Habs winning game one, shutout Bruins winning game two.
Beautiful. Beauty. I sort of compliment yours in that my prognostication not as all-inclusive as yours, but I got PK Subban scoring the first Habs goal of the series in game four in Montreal. I got PK getting first blood. I feel like he's due. He didn't score once against Tampa Bay, and he played beastly. And,
He did. He's back.
He always ratchets it up a little for Boston on top of that. So I got Subban with the first Habs goal of the series.
Interesting to see if the power play wakes up as well.
Hey, it got the ultimate goal of the Tampa Bay series.
Yep, it did. And like we said, that, you know, that might be all it takes for Pacioretty to get rolling.
That'd be nice. Carve up some Bruins patches. Make your Connecticut dad proud again. And who, sir, or rather, allow me to ask you to kindly drop a Marchand?
My Marchand of the week is the NHL schedule makers.
Yeah, all right.
That noon start, I don't even really have a problem with the noon start. It does mean I have to get up earlier, a hell of a lot earlier than usual on Saturday, but I'll live.
I don't know about that.
The noon start doesn't really bug me. I don't think the game will be fantastic, but whatever. It does bug me that... Even in this new era, I mean, we'll see if this changes next year with the Rogers deal, but why does NBC always seem to have the leverage?
I don't know.
I mean, I know why. It's just, you know, the way the league's tilted for the last 20 years under Bettman. No, but it's extremely irritating that anytime one of these series happens, it's NBC gets first dibs. And, you know, CBC, who's been a partner with the league for, what, 70 years now, 60 years now, always seems to be, you know, picking up the breadcrumbs. So that irritated me. It would have been, especially, this is the last ever... You know, real season of Hockey Night in Canada on CBC, it would have been nice for them to get a couple Saturday night games. I mean, if Montreal doesn't go on to round three, I think CBC is going to have had one Saturday night game with a Canadian team in their final playoffs.
They're going to have to cut 200 more jobs.
Yeah. So, yeah, the NHL schedulers for once again sort of prioritizing the American market over the Canadian market.
Fair enough. Good old hockey complaint. I'm going to start things off with my Marchand. Going after the media, I mean, this is an easy shot. This is shooting a broadside barn here. But Joe Haggerty for this one. The man can't even take... The man's so up his own ass. If you don't know him, he's a Boston media idiot. He's so up his own ass that he can't even tell when he's being specifically targeted at this point. Like, he had a response today to a great post... on Habs Eyes on the Prize. Yeah, that was clearly ribbing. That was obvious, much in the same way, you know, the forum that we had up this week, what do you hate most about the Bruins? 100% true from all of us. You know, also, of course, part of the playing into the rivalry and the fun. And once again, took it seriously, tried to argue back, used the old cliche of fanboys and in their mom's basement. It's just like, you can't. If you're going to play the game that he plays, don't be so lowest common denominator and so stupid that you even play into the hands that obviously are dealt directly to you. If you don't even have the self-respect to avoid that, come on, man. And I don't know why I expect more from Haggerty. He's pretty much the worst of the worst. But I feel he's...
Have you not met Jack Edwards?
Yeah, that's true. Jack Edwards is the worst of the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, Jack Edwards. Good for Kyle on our site in the forum for putting him three times on the list of the worst thing about the Bruins. Guy, he's oh my god. This is a guy he's in the fucking parade with the team when they win the Stanley Cup. Like, he knows he's not on the Boston Bruins, right? Clearly not.
Not entirely sure that he does.
I don't think he does. And finally, sir, as we get out of here, your highlight of the week. What is it?
No Habs highlights to choose from because we're so damn good. We've been off for 10
Actually,
days.
Actually, I had P.K. Subban at the Blacked Out Skate.
What's that?
P.K. Subban at the Blacked Out Skate was my highlight of the week, so there was Habs action.
Oh, well played. Mine was Jonathan Toews, that breakaway goal.
Very nice.
Game 5 against St. Louis. I mean, he has reached, you know, he's reached the point in his career where the moment you saw that he had a little bit of space, you're like, well, this game's over. Mm-hmm. And it was a great moment by a guy who's got a lot of them. Like I said earlier, his trophy collection's getting pretty big and his highlight reel's getting pretty big. And he's really one of those special players who, when he does retire 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 18 years from now, we're going to look back at all those moments, both in the NHL and internationally, and just kind of be blown away.
Can't disagree. My actual highlight of the week was the Kings' comeback. Even if it doesn't get completed tonight, they made it interesting. What looked like, I mean, 2 weeks ago on the podcast, we talked about how San Jose looked like the most impressive team in the first round. I think that had to end up being the Bruins because the Sharks sharked. They sharked the bed. Kings are back. We'll see what happens in Game 7. But even if the Kings lose this one, they made what looked like a blowout into the series that I think we all really expected it to be. And that was the thing that had me most checking the scores, because I can't stay up for those games, but checking scores first thing in the morning, that was the score I was looking for, was King San Jose. Once they got it to 4-1, I think the doubt creeped into everybody's mind about these Sharks, because they are the San Jose Sharks, and if one team's going to blow it when they definitely shouldn't, there's a lot of reputation to build for these guys this year, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
It's crazy.
I don't know how much more set... I was buying in on the Sharks this year, something I've never done in the entire history of that team. And if they go and fail tonight, that's really something.
Yeah, that is rough.
Well, sir, we should go watch that game.
We should, yeah.
All right, thanks for listening. Next you hear us, we'll be deep inside a war. It's going to be interesting. Habs Bruins, are you ready?
I guess so.
I guess so, too.